Well, good afternoon. It's so wonderful to see all of you here. I think this is a record. So thank you all for coming. And for those of you who are not familiar with Good Shepherd Church, I'd like to introduce our pastor, the Reverend Ralph Klingon. And he has a special blessing, as he always does. And he has his ways, even if you have already had your food or starting to eat it. So I'll let him explain.
Welcome, everyone, and so glad to see you all. And as she was alluding to, I'll take this opportunity to bless the food, whatever condition it is currently in. Gracious Lord, we do thank you for the gift and beauty of this day, for this time that we can be in each other's company and in yours, for the birth and glory of creation, for the sunlight, for all that reminds us of your love for us, and for the gift of this day and this fellowship of sharing with one another. For the food that has been prepared, the hands that have prepared it, we ask your continued blessing. For this we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
I'm going to read this because I don't want to miss anything. We're happy to welcome as our speaker today, psychologist Dr. Tim Kochler, PhD. Dr. Kochler completed an American Psychological Association internship in forensic psychology at Florida State Hospital, and he's currently the only certified forensic examiner in Southern Utah. He also completed a two-year fellowship in clinical neuropsychology at Baylor. He is a published author with clinical and research interests in forensic and neuropsychology. Although Dr. Kochler is licensed to practice in California, New Mexico, Iowa, Arizona, and Nevada, most important for us is that he's also licensed to practice in Utah and said yes to sharing his expertise during this hour with us.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction. So as Alicia said, I'm Dr. Kochler. I moved here in 2005 and began to practice at the medical center. So I worked for them from 2005 to 2012, at which time I decided to part ways and then open up my own practice. So my practice is located on Riverside and River Road Drive. A couple house cleaning things before we get started. If you have cell phones, if you would kindly mute them so we don't have any interruptions, that would be great. Secondly, I do see some familiar faces here, so that means you're probably my patient, which is great. It's so nice to see you folks, but as you know, I'm bound by ethical and legal guidelines to protect your privacy. So I just want to make sure that we do that carefully. If you are my patient, you get extra credit for being here. I always like to open up with a little joke for my talks, and I thought this would be a fun one to have today. A priest, a minister, and a rabbi hear about a bear causing trouble in the woods nearby. Three men, friendly rivals, decide among themselves that what this bear needs to be soothed is some religion. So they declared a contest to see who can convert it. They draw straws, and the Catholic priest is the first to try. He heads into the woods and comes back 3 hours later with a few claw swipes across his face and hands and tells the other two, "I read from the catechism and the bear seemed to enjoy that. But when I sprinkled him with holy water, he tried to maul me and I ran." The Protestant minister is the second to go, and he's gone all evening, meeting his friends the next afternoon with a bandage around his head and a broken leg. He says to them, "I found the bear by the river and I preached to him from God's holy word. And he was as gentle as a lamb until I tried to baptize him in the river. He nearly bit my head off and I had to bolt for my life." Lastly, went the Jewish rabbi off into the woods. His friends hear nothing from him for 2 whole days, until they receive word that he's in the hospital. They rush over to find him in the ICU, a cast covering most of his body, and vicious wounds all over the rest of him. They frantically ask him, what happened? And between labored breaths through the ventilator, he mutters, you know, thinking about it, I probably shouldn't have opened with the circumcision. I'm glad you all enjoyed that. So today, what we're going to do is talk about a little bit of dementia, some of the different types of dementia, the treatment options. I want to save a little time for questions at the tail end. I'll probably take the next 45 minutes or so to go through my discussion here. If you have questions you would like me to ask me as I go through this, please feel free to interrupt me. That will be fine, but just know that I will save a little time at the tail end. I do need to cut out at 1 o'clock sharp because I do have a busy clinic to get back to, okay? We do, my office was insistent that I bring some things, some little goodies. On the back table there, we have a little pepper. My receptionist has fondly entitled it, Food for Your Thoughts. And it's actually quite creative. There's a lot of recipes in there, and they're all driven for healthy brain. Okay, so there's that is about a couple hundred pages worth back there. And then about the last quarter or so, there's a bunch of homeopathic type treatment options as well. Okay, it's been very popular. Okay, let's get started. So the agenda today, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what a neuropsychologist does, me, the types of dementia, and then the importance of lifestyle. What is a neuropsychologist? So as was explained, I am a psychologist by training, but I also have extensive training in neuro. So 2 years of fellowship training as well at Baylor in Texas. So I'm much more advanced than what your garden variety psychologist would offer you. Neurology and neuropsychology are basically sister professions. So neurology does things I can't do, and I do things that they can't do. But together we serve together as a treatment team. Okay? At the end of the day, we both deal with neurological issues. So a typical patient for me would be somebody who comes in with memory loss, memory concerns, or perhaps a parent brings in their 10-year-old child and says he can't focus in class, and he's been disruptive in the classroom, and he's been to the principal's office and those type of things. So I see patients of the whole developmental lifespan from 5 on up to my seasoned patients. Okay? All right. What does a neuropsychologist do? Neuropsychologist, patient comes in, I look at the referral, I meet with the patient, we go through the interview, find out what's going on with my patient, and then I turn him over to my technician. I have several technicians in my office, and they go back and they also do a lot of different cognitive testing. I like to call them brain teasers, because if I start talking about testing, it does cause some anxiety for some of my patients. Okay, because then they start thinking about, well, this must be a pass or fail. Well, I'm going to get a grade at the end of the day. But in actuality, well, you're not. But I'm just really trying to figure out how my patient's brain is functioning. So we'll assess memory, attention and concentration, processing speed, problem solving, motor skills, everything that beautiful brain does. These exams are several hours long. Let me give an example. For a standard, I have memory loss concerns, you're looking at 2 to 3 hours. Now, I know it seems like an exceedingly long time, but as my patients will probably tell you here, the time actually goes pretty quick. Because you're so engaged with my technician, that time really flies by. And I've had patients tell me it actually seems like 20 to 30 minutes. Okay? And some of the things that you do are actually quite fun. On the other side of the coin, when I do legal consultations, whether they're civil or criminal, those examinations can be all day. So I do FAA consultations. Pilots come to see me from all over the country to do FAA exams because they've had a stroke, or perhaps they've been put on a medication and now they're trying to become a pilot. And the FAA says, oh, you were on this medication when you were 15? Go see Dr. Kochler. Okay? So and there's handouts back there, I think some brochures that Pepper left, but I do a wide range of things. I do not have a boring life. I've interviewed people on the FBI's top 10 most wanted, to the Mexican mafia, it's pretty wild. I'll just be honest with you, it's amazing what I get to do. I'm just very blessed. Once the technician gets done, the data comes to me, and then I start putting things together like a little jigsaw puzzle. So here's the CAT scan of the brain, here's the MRI, maybe there's an EEG, here's some blood work on my patient. I start putting things together in a report along with the data. And by the time I get done with one report, we probably have, on average, 6 to 8 hours invested into that work product at the end of the day. So they're very labor intensive from the time I meet my patient to the time I sign off. Turnaround time, surprisingly, I can get these reports done within a day or two. So I turn around quickly, I get them back over to the referral source, my patient has a follow-up appointment, and they come back and meet with me, and then we go over the results together. And this is the important stuff. This is where I tell my patient how the brain's functioning, what my impressions are, and then importantly, the recommendations, and then I take any questions. Okay? Does that give you a decent overview of what I do as a profession? Okay, very good. Any questions at this time? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so in the name, neuropsychologist, so the question is, do I also see mental health patients? And I do. So I see everything, depression, we had a paranoid person yesterday, anxiety, learning disabilities, autism, and then your standard neurological condition, Parkinson's, MS, dementia. There's really nothing that I wouldn't touch. Yeah. Uh-oh, here we go. All right, so let's talk about dementia. We've all heard the term dementia. Grandma had dementia. The reality is, dementia is an umbrella term that we use for all of the different subtypes of dementia, as we'll be talking about here shortly. Dementia is really just cognitive disturbance in the brain that can be caused by a variety of issues. It could be my patient has abnormal blood work. It could be my patient had a serious traumatic brain injury. So there could be an external factor as to why my patient's brain is not functioning. Okay? Over here. Thank you. So this is what I'm alluding to. Dementia, there's some memory loss. Aphasia, which is the inability to express oneself. It sits roughly right here in the Brodmann's area, the Broca's area of the brain. That's the expressive language center, foremost right-hand dominant people. Okay? Apraxia is the inability to carry out purposeful movement. There are many different types of apraxia. Dressing apraxia is one, the inability to dress him or herself. So sometimes you'll have loved ones put their shirts on backwards. I had another patient who put his pants on top of his head. I don't recommend that. I don't know that you'll get very far. So agnosia, executive functioning. So that's the part sitting right here. The frontal lobes are roughly 30% of your brain, and it sits right here and cuts off roughly right here. As I tell my patients, the frontal lobes are the CEO of the brain, the conductor of the orchestra. So if things start going awry in the front part of the brain, we got a problem. So decision-making, judgment, reasoning, all of those higher-level decision-making skills that we rely on a day-to-day basis, they will be compromised on some level. Yeah, and as I mentioned here, the cause, the ideology varies. It could be medications, it could be lab work, it could be a lot of things. Number one, let's take Alzheimer's disease. That's the number one most common type of dementia that we have in the United States. Roughly 6 million people plus have that condition. And it's exploding. Does anybody know why? Older. Age is a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. Diet is a contributing factor. But the longer you live, the more likely you are to have Alzheimer's disease. So, if we make it to 85, for example, you're at a 50% chance of having it. So that is a heads or tails flip of the coin. Okay? I know a lot of you are 25 in here. Lewy body dementia, that one's an interesting one. We'll talk about that here shortly. Vascular, frontal temporal dementia, AIDS dementia, alcohol dementia. I think I'm going to be able to get to the first four. Alzheimer's disease, like I say, 6 million, and that is exploding. Early versus late onset. The age that my profession has given for early versus late is 65. I've seen 15 to 20,000 patients roughly over my years of being licensed. I can think of five patients where I diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in their 50s, and the lifespan is roughly 5 years. Incredibly aggressive. It is not friendly. Now, when we talk about Alzheimer's, then late 70s and 80s and so on, when we have that discussion, I tell my patients, look, I really don't want you to lose sleep over this. I know I've dropped a bomb on your lap, but it's really not the one that's going to get you called upstairs. You're probably not going to live long enough to see this disease in its full fruition. Okay, Ronald Reagan had Alzheimer's disease. He didn't die from it. He died from pneumonia complications. Okay, and I mean, if I was a betting man, Biden has Alzheimer's disease. Without a doubt, he shuffles. He's got the stoop posture. The expressive language is terrible. He's definitely got it. But I'm not treating him, and disclaimer, I've not evaluated him. That's just my impression. Okay, so cancer, heart attack, massive stroke, a good fall, those are the ones that I'm going to stay up at night worry about my patients. Okay?
What about social interaction?
Have you been to some of my previous talks? He's right on this. So we're going to talk about some important things for a healthy brain. Social activity is one of them. Okay? Great question or a great comment. Medication options, there are a few out there that are accepted. Some of the new ones that are coming out are quite controversial at this point. Aricept, Namenda, and Exelon are the three go-to ones that have been around. I will say, a disclaimer there, is that the medications are not a cure. They are to help slow the progression of the memory loss. Okay? So don't expect to come out of the doctor's office with an Einstein memory. Okay? So the cardinal symptom of Alzheimer's, of course, is that extreme forgetfulness. And the beauty of what we do in my clinic is I can tease apart what is normal age-related decline, which happens right around 40 people. I know, that's the reality. 40, present day. That's what we have to look forward to. The extreme forgetfulness, because it basically starts here in the two memory centers. So visual and verbal memory are the two things that are going first. And then Alzheimer's then just starts to migrate throughout the brain. And then we have some of these other symptoms here. So the causes, again, I get a lot of questions about genetics. I had a family member who had it. And the reality is, it's like 1%. So you're not doomed to get this. It doesn't mean the light switch will get turned on. Okay? Now, there is a genetic variant. We call it the APOE4 genetic variant. And that does put you at a little higher risk. And you'll see that a lot running down one side of the family. So there was grandma had it, you know, mom or dad, my siblings, my aunt, uncles, and you just got this real strong run of people who've had it. And then in those cases, I'll ask my patient, do you want to go get some genetic testing? And sometimes they do. Even when they have, say, a clean bill of health from me, it's important sometimes. They want to let their kids know, hey, I'm a gene carrier. You might want to think about this as well. Risk factors, age, as I said earlier, family history, Down syndrome. Sorry, ladies. Females, higher risk. But they also live longer than guys. Okay? Let's talk about this little diagnosis here. MCI is called mild cognitive impairment. MCI is stuck between age-related normal decline and dementia. So right here in the middle is MCI. MCI, basically the patient comes in and says, Dr. Kochler, I got some memory concerns. We do the exam. Lo and behold, the testing says, yeah, there's some memory concerns here, but the rest of the neurological profile is normal. So memory here, attention and concentration, everything else right where it should be. And then my patient is also functioning out there in the real world. So they're still doing, you know, driving a car, doing their laundry, all of their day-to-day functions without any problems. It's just this darn memory. That's what MCI is. Here's the kicker. MCI is a precursor to dementia. So we know from the research, 60 to 80% of MCI patients progress into a dementia within 6 to 8 years. So you're not necessarily out of the woods either. Make sense? Okay. And really these other ones here, folks, are just environmental, honestly, and poor choices, poor lifestyle choices, which we'll talk a little bit more about.
What
Yeah, there's a correlation, but it's not causation. Okay? So here's a little picture on the difference between Lewy body dementia, which is the number two most common type of dementia, versus the Alzheimer's. And you can see here, men are at a higher risk for Lewy body. Survival rate, 79, second most common. And then it's those Lewy body proteins, which is quite interesting. Lewy body dementia, it looks a lot like Parkinson's disease. So what happens is my patient a lot of times will be misdiagnosed. They're initially diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and then all of a sudden this thing starts to change a little bit. And then they're seeing stuff on the ceiling, on their bed. They got these little gnome little friends, you know, that they carry around. They got these people that visit them from time to time. As far as I can make it out, it's not spirits, okay? So when they see these things, these visual, or what we could call vivid hallucinations, it doesn't cause them emotional distress like it would, say, for the psychotic person. That's the uniqueness about this. So I just had patients tell me in a very matter-of-fact way that, you know, I got these people that I see, you know, they come to see me from time to time, and that's it. Okay? So Lewy body, more of a Parkinson-type presentation. They got the classic tremor. They'll shuffle their feet, the stoop posture. But one thing that sets them apart is those vivid hallucinations. And you have to be very careful about the treatment with them, because they have what we call medication sensitivity a lot of times. And so if a primary care doc is seeing their patient and the patient says, I'm seeing things, not to pick on the primary care docs, but they're going to treat the symptom. So here's an antipsychotic. Well, that's probably the worst thing you can do, because it can be fatal. Okay? So some medication should be carefully, or even avoided for that particular condition. And there's the Lewy body patient right here, the vivid hallucinations, the movement disorders that looks like a Parkinson's. Their autonomic system, their heart rate, blood pressure, you know, you'll have them pass out because their blood pressure is being dysregulated, for example. The cognitive issues, of course, sleep trouble. Again, with the Parkinson's, people have very vivid dreams. That's one of the symptoms of Parkinson's. You'll see that in the Lewy body patient as well. The attention on these people goes like this, almost minute to minute. Okay? Depression, lack of motivation. You know, I can't get him up. He doesn't want to do anything anymore. He just sits there on the couch. And there's the abnormal proteins. And there they are, right here. Yes?
Do the Lewy body patients maybe tend to be more aggressive?
Okay, so the question...
different, you know, like that's not good because they become really aggressive.
So do the Lewy body patients inherently, are they more violent or aggressive than, say, your garden variety dementia? That's really a difficult one to say, because not all conditions impact the patient the same. So I do have patients who were very passive type individuals, and now they're physically aggressive. Okay? And then conversely, I have patients who are maybe a little bit more sensation-seeking type behavior, and now they're very passive and won't get up and do anything. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. Risk factors, as the other slide said, men, higher risk. We all, I don't know, maybe you don't know, but Robin Williams had Lewy body dementia. All right, let's switch gears and go into frontal temporal dementia. And this is one of the earlier ones. So if you make it to 65, you're more or less, I don't want to say completely 100% safe, but you're more likely than not to have avoided FTD. So frontal temporal dementias, roughly 10 to 20% of the people with dementia get this. And frontal, the name basically describes what it is. Frontal temporal, these two areas here. Remember, the frontal region is the El Presidente, the CEO, right? So you're going to imagine that these people are going to have some pretty unusual behaviors. And that's where the behavioral changes right here, and the language. Because again, the language sits roughly right here in the frontal temporal region. So they will have a hard time articulating themselves. And the other cardinal symptoms that you'll see are those significant behavioral and personality changes. A lot of times, I kid you not, when a couple comes in, before they even sit on my couch, the loved one is complaining before they even sit down. You know, I'm so glad we're here. This is not the guy I married. He's doing things completely out of character. I don't know what's going on here. And it's not alcohol. I'm having fun, of course. But it's not alcohol driven. So he or she is really doing some pretty abnormal stuff. And I'll give you some examples here. Sometimes patients with this condition will have what we call hyperorality, eating excessively. They cannot turn it off. So they eat, and eat all the time. And sometimes they'll eat things that are not food, inanimate type stuff. So I've had loved ones padlock the fridge and put a lock on the pantry to help. I've had patients who were very passive type people, law-abiding citizens, end up in purgatory. No, not Catholic purgatory, that purgatory. Okay? So really doing some pretty weird things. Genetics, again, plays a small role here. Genetic mutations, but half, no family history. I don't have this in the slide, but I do have a little time, so I want to talk about vascular dementia, because that's an important one. Vascular dementia, again, is different in its causes and different in its treatment. Vascular dementia, think of it this way. In the freeway part of the brain, speckles start to happen. It's in the white, what we call the white matter. And age is a risk factor for that. So a lot of times on imaging, you'll see the radiologist will say, like, there's chronic ischemia, chronic white matter disease, those type of terms. Let's talk about what some of those vascular risk factors are. Age, as I said, blood pressure. That one's probably the number one medical condition. Cholesterol, diabetes, untreated sleep apnea, weight, cardiovascular issues, lung issues, COPD, emphysema, kidney disease, genetics. Those are the biggies. And so, again, it just causes these little speckles in the freeway, little pocket holes that we can't repair. Now, if it's severe enough, sometimes those veins up there will start to harden. And that's not a good thing. Hardening of the arteries. Atherosclerosis, arteriosclerosis. I think if there was a dementia that, if I had to pick one for myself, would probably be vascular, mainly because it's more of a prevention model. Lifestyle, because if you're not overweight, you're exercising and eating healthy, all those type of things, all of a sudden it minimizes that type of stuff. Okay, make sense? So this gentleman here, Professor Longo, is one of the gurus in studying why people live beyond 100. So he has done extensive research with centenarians, so people who live more than 100. And if you look, so if you're interested, go to Google and just do Blue Zone Research or Professor Longo and Blue Zone. You can also go to YouTube and you'll find a bunch of videos him giving. You might be a little bit academically driven, a little heavy, but nevertheless informative. Yes?
We have had a lunch and learn program last year on Blue Zone. So this audience is very
great.
Familiar. And Deanna Forrest, one of our members, presented the program. So.
Wonderful. So lifestyle is incredibly important. Here are some things you can do for a healthy brain, stress management, anti-cancer properties, and anti-blood pressure. Those things, I believe Pepper put them in the book. So that's a flavor of what's actually contained in the more comprehensive book. Okay. If you have, I'm a wine connoisseur, so I do like a daily glass of wine for supper. And I'll tell you that the red wine is the best to get. Pinot Noir is the highest in antioxidants. Okay? A plus. So there's one back there who's very happy.
What about resveratrol?
Sorry?
What about resveratrol?
Never heard of it.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't.
Really?
So I do have some friends who struggle with migraine headaches from drinking wine or not. And what they've told me, if you go to Amazon, they have little stir sticks that can take out the sulfites. And or you can get this clear liquid, you put like a drop or two in there and it takes out the sulfites, okay? The other tip is there are some wines that are biodynamic that might be also useful to look at. Okay, guys can drink up to 2 glasses of wine a day. Women get 1, just because of the body mass. Okay. Some other quick little health tips, and then I better move on. If you go to Costco, I know I do. I think I'm a VIP there. In the candy section, but you know how they like to move things around so much. Brookside chocolates. They're the Asahi berries with the dark chocolate. Okay, so chocolate's actually good for you, not the Milky Ways or the Snickers, but the dark chocolate. Okay, so get the Asahi berries. It's a nice way, a nice little dessert, if you will. In the cooler section, kind of by the pomegranate juice, orange juice, etc., you're going to see the Asahi juice about this tall. Kind of comes in a purplish red. It's a organic smoothie type substance. I recommend that as well. ACAI. One more. And how many of you like fish? Good, I like to see that. Fish is a wonderful, clean food. Very good for the heart, very good for the brain. But it must be wild. Okay, whenever you go out to eat, make sure you ask the waiter if this is wild salmon, wild halibut, whatever it is. Yes, ma'am.
What about fish oil capsules?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Fish oil is fine, omega-3s, any of that stuff. The Kochler household, my wife is the poster child for homeopathic. Okay? She is. And so I learn all these things from her. Out at Costco, there in the salmon section, There is a box like so. I think you get 6 fillets for around $20. And it says wild Alaskan salmon. It's already sauteed, it's very good. Okay? Easy to make, very delicious. Okay? Okay, I fail miserably on this. I don't know about the rest of you. Water. And my only excuse is I see patients just one after the other, but it's a sad excuse. The rule of thumb is roughly have half of your body weight in water a day. That's a lot. Okay, I know it means a lot of restroom breaks, but your flushing system too. The kidneys are staying, you know, up to functioning and so on. Sorry, no fried food. Okay. Chips. Who doesn't love chips? I think this is probably in the cookbook that Pepper put together. Directions. All right. So every single patient that I see in my clinic gets this little speech. We know from the research, 3 things are the key to brain health: social, mental, physical activity. Okay? You don't have to be a social butterfly, you know, but calling the family member, a friend, meeting with your neighbor at the fence line, conversations with your wife or your loved one, going out to dinner, things like that with a couple, that will suffice. Mental activity can be anything you enjoy. I always tell my patients, whatever you're gonna do, do something you enjoy. Last night I played Monopoly with my family. Reading a good book. Card games, board games, Scrabble, Sudoku, solitaire by yourself if you don't have anybody to join you. Just my own preference. If there's a hobby that you enjoy, of course. I don't really have any research to back this up, but I do see the whole lifespan. The people who are doing best in school and later in life are just avid readers. Okay? So I try to read, 15 to 30 minutes a night. I've started taking Italian. Been doing that now for the past year or two. So I just really try to stimulate that brain as much as I can. Okay? Physical activity. 30 minutes Monday through Friday. That's all the research says. You don't have to run the St. George Marathon, the Ironman. 30 minutes. And that can be formal or informal exercise. Okay. Health tip. The people who walk into my clinic who look great and feel great, they found the fountain of youth. They walk. They're avid walkers. And it's been such an eye-opening experience for me. Every night after I get done at the clinic, I go home, get on my treadmill. All right. In Dr. Longo's research, and you folks probably know this, but they're actually advocating for lower protein and higher carb. That's what they're showing in their research, which is actually the reverse of what we push here in the United States. But they're saying, so right here, that's low. I mean, you have an egg, maybe some tuna, or a chicken breast, you're done. That's it. Okay? If there's one thing I want you to take care of from today, movement is medicine. If you want a quick death sentence, sit at home on the couch, watch TV, and eat chips. If you want to try, if you want to try to thin the blood out afterward, have some vino.
Should you add beer to those chips?
Beer is empty calories. I do love a beer on a very, very hot day. There's nothing like it. But I just love my wine. And there's Pepper's little order now. I think that's it. That's it, folks. Let me take some questions from everybody. I got about 10 minutes. Let's start here in front.
Do you deal with people with brain cancer?
Yes. Yes, I do.
The reason I'm asking is because I had two brothers and a first cousin who all died in a short period of time with brain cancer.
Yeah, so the reason I paused there is because I was thinking, well, is it because it metastasized, or is there a brain tumor sitting there? So, yes, so your classic brain tumor, I would see patients like that. And what's kind of nice about, what I do, is if the neurosurgeon or neurology sends the patient over before the surgery, I can do a pre-surgical consultation of what the patient's doing right now, and then I can do a post-surgical, we can do a comparative analysis of the data, which has treatment implications. The other thing, and just to kind of piggyback on that question about do I see brain tumor patients, I do have patients with various conditions. Sometimes I have them come back annually or every few years, like if they have MCI or something or a dementia, because they want to keep an eye on the progression of this. How's this condition progressing? Is the treatment working, right? Is this medication working? Do we need to get a little more aggressive, et cetera? And that's where we have the objective data. So I've had a run on patients recently I've seen in the past year. We take the 2022 data, look at the 2023 data, and then where do we go from here? That's what's nice about it. Does that help answer your question? Yes, brain tumors, there are higher risk there for having that. But unless you have any kind of symptoms, falling down, seizure activity, things like that, you're probably okay. Let's go right here and then back there. Yes, sir. Okay. To the what? So the brain will continue to go downhill. There'll be a slow progression, and that's hopefully normal. But I wouldn't know until I actually saw you or anybody else. Again, 40 to 87, this is what we expect to happen. And when you would come in, I'm hoping that your data is basically doing what it's supposed to do. But if it's not, then we start talking about abnormal stuff. Why what?
Why do I forget it all the time? I start to...
Yeah, it could be normal or abnormal. I don't know. That's the million-dollar question. I don't know until I would actually see you.
Is it a good sign that eventually, like if you forget where you put something, but eventually you remember, like he said he forgot what I was going to ask, but eventually he remembers.
So if you remember later, that gives me a little glimmer of hope, because that means the visual or the verbal memory is sitting there in the memory center. My patient is having a hard time retrieving the information. So sometimes when patients are cued by family members or friends, that will help facilitate with the recall.
Right.
Okay. Yes, back here. Oh, yes, that's another question. Thank you. Does insurance cover? Yes. I will, Medicare, Blue Cross, Select, United Healthcare. The only one we don't take is Medicaid. Okay? But yes. And then it depends on when you come in. Some people have deductibles. That's what I have my office for. So if you have a $5,000 deductible that's not met, you'll have to, eat some of that first. No, I think Pepper prefers a referral, but I don't think it is required. Okay? Yes, ma'am.
So if the person has already got to the stage where he's sitting on the couch all day and the regular family doctor has put him on a couple of medications, is there a benefit to coming to see you instead of just doing
it? So loved one has been put on medication, sits around all day, doesn't do a whole lot. Is there a benefit coming to see me? I would say yes, because I've had patients come to my office who were prescribed a medication when they didn't need it. For example, they were put on Aricept for memory loss. And, wow, your testing's normal. I don't know why you're on this medication. It's kind of like doing surgery without having the x-ray first. So I'm the x-ray, then we figure out if we have to have surgery. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sure. We keep it fun there. As you can tell, we're very laid back. So tell them I'm not that bad. We've had nobody die in my clinic. You know, should the loved one come along? I do like to have the loved one come along because they can give me the nitty-gritty, the real details. A lot of times my patients are not the most reliable informant, and that may be because they're memory loss, right? Or they're trying to minimize problems. I had a patient this morning. Oh, everything's fine, and then she goes in to get tested, and the family member's like in panic mode. You're not going to believe this. She can't balance her checkbook. She can't do this. And I'm like, wow. See, so the collateral data can be incredibly helpful. So that's, and those are, so the question, not really a question, but the comment is, she has a sister who's basically forgetting the food and maybe not eating and so on. And that's where I can come into play a role too. I have patients who want to know, well, the loved one says, is he safe to drive? Should he or she be living independently? You know, the kids live out of state, should they move back home with us? So I can answer those real world, you know, questions, but I need to see the patient. So are they assisted living material? Should they be in memory care facility? Those type of things. There's a lot of neuropsychologists out there. Just do a search, you'll find them. Other questions? I got about 5 more minutes. Yes, ma'am. And they'll come over here.
And I thought, being a nurse, you know, I thought he was having early signs of dementia because he used to cook and now he can't do anything at all. His wife gives him his food and everything. And then I said to her, take him to the doctor, take him to a neurologist.
Stroke, possibly. Possibly. So, we have an in-law who has gone downhill, higher functioning gentleman, but now is not able to care for himself very well. The other little point I'll make about that: there was the question of possibly why is this happening. Well, it could be a variety of reasons. Stroke is one of them. Imaging, CAT scan, MRIs. Especially the TIAs, the small one, they will not pick those up on imaging. So you can still have a small little stroke, but it's not going to show up visually. The bigger ones, right, the bigger strokes, yeah, they'll typically show up. Yes, ma'am.
How long do you think this value in food supplements
Oh, yeah. It's another question I get. So Prevagen, Focus Factor, Brain Boost, that kind of stuff, don't waste your money. Let's take Prevagen, not to pick on them, but I like to anyway. So Prevagen, several years ago, was actually sued by several state attorney generals for their false claims. Now, I think they got a little slap on the hand, and they probably had to change that, you know, that micro print at the bottom you can't read anyway? So I assume they got a slap on the hand, a little, you know, fine, and then, but they're back up, because I do see their commercials from time to time. Here's the rule of thumb. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So I stick with the basic supplements, folks. B12 can cause brain dysfunction. B12. Vitamin D deficiency can cause brain dysfunction, not to mention sluggishness, and etc. So if you're not eating very well, your B12 may be stinky, and then you're feeling sluggish. Your thyroid could be out of whack, too. That causes people fatigue. Guys, testosterone, low testosterone causes lack of energy, the libido, all of those type of things. So it could be a variety of reasons why that happened. I just don't know until I see this person. Depression, right? Depression, one of the symptoms of depression is just lethargy. You know? That's what all patients say. Nobody has depression. Anything you want. So crossword puzzles, whatever you got, my two thumbs up. Okay? So again, back to the homeopathic, and then I should probably go. Or my office is going to hunt me down. B12, the vitamin D, omega-3s, vitamin C. I do everything. I mean, I take turmeric. Turmeric is one. I want you to be very careful. And as I tell my patient, here's my disclaimer, my legal disclaimer. If you take homeopathic stuff, clear it with your primary first. Always. Turmeric, tomato, tomato, however you want to say it. Turmeric, I take it with curcumin, the combo. It's supposed to be good for anti-inflammatory type stuff, also good for the noggin, and somewhat a protective for Alzheimer's prevention. However, that's one that can thin the blood. So if you're on warfarin, Coumadin, Eliquis, blood thinners, that's a recipe that just would not work. Be careful.
Can you still have a glass of wine?
Always. Always room for the vino. Okay? All right, folks, I got to go. You've been wonderful. Thank you so much.
So much.